You're about to listen to a talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown at the beautiful Academy of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. If you want more information on our center, please see our Facebook page or our website. Thanks for listening. I hope these words of wisdom make a positive difference in your life.
I want to talk about peace today. Anybody been watching the news this week? What's been going on? Well, it's been very personal for me because one of my younger brothers and his wife and two teenage sons work for the U.S. Embassy in Kiev, Ukraine. They live about two blocks away from the square where all this stuff has been going on. And we got my mother was getting some brief emails. I don't know what was harder for me, being concerned about my brother or dealing with my 86-year-old mother being concerned with my brother. But at any rate, it's been a pretty stressful week with everything going on. And all we were getting were occasional one-sentence emails. And when one came in on Monday that simply said, the hit the fan. And I've been watching BBC and trying to keep up with everything there while it was going on. Fortunately, things seem to have cleared up. But I want to talk about peace today, not just because it's relevant to what's happening in the Ukraine and in Syria and in Afghanistan and in the West Bank of Israel and in Egypt and in the Central African Republic, etc., 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 but also because we are, at this point in time, middle February, we're in the middle of something called the Season for Nonviolence. And I know some of you, a number of you, know what that is. But for those of you who may not be familiar with it, let me give you a little bit of background. In 1998, 16 years ago, a group of the larger New Thought centers, including the Agape Center in Los Angeles with Dr. Michael Beckwith and the Mile High Center in Denver, 3,000 or 4,000 members, they got together and they thought up an interesting way to try and expand the world's awareness of the power that we have to create peace instead of waging war through the use of nonviolence. Now, their most prominent examples, of course, were Mahatma Gandhi, who developed the concept of nonviolent resistance in India, and our own Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., among others who worked with him, who expanded upon Gandhi's principles during the American Civil Rights Movement. Now, these two individuals, in addition to their other outstanding accomplishments, did more than anyone else in history to advance the cause of peaceful resistance as a powerful and constructive way for the average person or group who were dealing with injustice or persecution to successfully confront the destructive power of conflict and ignorance in the world, but not just to confront it, but to overcome it. We saw a great example in many ways of the good and the bad in the Ukraine this week. So these two men and the women and men who worked with them not only taught this concept, they practiced it. And they used it very, very effectively. Anyway, as it turned out, 1998, when the group was getting together to start this, that happened to be the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi and the 30th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. So they decided they would take the specific dates of these assassinations, the 64 days between January 30th, when Gandhi was assassinated, to April 4th, when Dr. King passed, as the Season for Nonviolence. That was the name they designated. And to focus that during that period, not just on avoiding war, but to focus on positive and proactive ways to promote peace where it needs to be promoted, which is in the hearts and minds of all people everywhere. Now, it was a wonderful idea, and it's been very successful. In fact, since 2007, the United Nations has been actually celebrating this season, and October 2nd, in case you're not aware of it, is an International Day of Nonviolence declared by the United Nations. Now, next year, I'm hoping that we here at CSL will get more involved in this and do a little bit more from the platform and in the community, sort of like we were doing over at SLCA when some of us were over there. But that means we're going to need volunteers. So if this is something that appeals to you, we've got lots of time to get ready for next year. Come talk to me or David or Angela or any of our practitioners, and we'll start putting together a team to work on it. But today I want to talk about something that a lot of us have been thinking about in general, because it seems that once again we have gotten ourselves into a very difficult position, not just as a country, but as a race of beings on the planet. What's happening right now in Syria, in the Ukraine, and all these other places is obviously a big point of concern, because once again we find ourselves in a position where if we take military action, something terrible might happen, but if we don't take military action, something terrible will continue to happen. That's a very difficult position to be in. Either way, right this very moment, a lot of innocent people are being killed, wounded, driven from their homes, driven from their towns, refugees, and all of the rest of the world, even those of us who are, you know, driving to our Sunday morning things, playing in the park, eating brunch, doing all these things in our nice, safe little environment, even those of us who are not directly in the line of fire are in danger of having to deal with the repercussions of either our action or our inaction of a country, either way, for many, many years to come. Now, these are very difficult situations, and we've had to deal with these kind of things as a country before, but the fact that we're having to do it again and again and again shows us that we still have something to learn. We still have something to learn. So what I want to do this morning is not to take a stand either for or against either side, because that's not my job to tell anybody what to think. My intention today is to get all of us, myself included, to think in a spiritual way about what kind of a world we want to create, both for ourselves and for our children. If not, if we don't have children, the children in the room back there who are going to be growing up into the world that we're creating, okay? Because, using Syria as an example, we're not just talking about selecting one of two options here. We're not just talking about either war or peace, because it's not that simple. You see, if you think about it, nobody wants war. Nobody does. It's true. In fact, everybody involved in all these situations wants peace. In our country, the Democrats and Republicans both want peace. The president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, and the opposition fighting his government, they both want peace. Ukraine, the president, and the opposition, they all want peace. The problem is, they all want peace on their own terms. That's the problem, okay? Whichever group we decide to listen to or look at it, either they want to be personally in charge of everyone else, or they want their own particular religion, their own particular political party, or their own moral philosophy to be the only one in place, and as long as everybody agrees with them, everything's fine. So even though the preferred option for all the parties in all these situations is the pursuit of peace, how that peace takes place and what the world or that particular country looks like after peace takes place is just as important as whether or not we manage to avoid a larger or more destructive civil or regional war. That's why the best solution is not to embrace or to avoid any particular action. The answer from a spiritual perspective, which is where we need to be looking at things, is for us all, everybody everywhere, to find a greater sense of balance and perspective in our lives, and for all of us to reach the obvious realization that we're all in this world together. Because if the answer we come up with, whatever that answer happens to look like, doesn't do that, it's not going to work. We're going to find ourselves in this situation again and again and again, because that kind of thinking is the only thing that's in harmony with the way life actually works. This actually touches on something, one of the most basic things that we teach here. We believe that we are all interconnected spiritual beings living on a uniquely hospitable planet, one of the few in the universe that we know of with, that can support life like this, with an abundance of resources that we all share, all of it designed and created through divine intent. Divine intent. I love that word. And it's created to support our continued physical existence, but also our continued spiritual growth. That's what this is, okay? We believe that we are intelligent, creative beings with the power to make conscious decisions that affect not only the direction of our own lives, but the direction of the world. That, at the core, is what we believe here, okay? Now, with all that being true, I believe that we are very slowly but very surely beginning to realize at the level of our shared consciousness, which means not just this teaching or this center, meaning everybody in every religion, every nation, everywhere, we are all starting to realize, a small number of people are, that wasting our energy and our resources on war and conflict and revolution and all these things is never going to help us realize the spiritual magnificence that we are here to express. But we're also beginning to realize that just sticking our head in the sand and hoping things will eventually get better is not the answer either. So now we find ourselves in the awkward position where we recognize the need to both acknowledge the problems that are showing up in the world, and to accept our responsibility, not just for creating them, but accepting our responsibility to deal with those problems in the most intelligent, most compassionate, and most constructive way possible for all concerned. Now, we are finding that to be easier said than done, obviously, okay? Because, to paraphrase Albert Einstein, the problems we are facing now cannot be solved at the level of consciousness we were at when we created them. Think what that means? We created the problems at this level of consciousness, and we cannot solve them down at that level. Okay? We've got to solve it from up here. So that means, if we're talking about doing it at a different level of consciousness, that we have some work to do in here, in me, in you, in everyone, before we're going to be able to straighten things out there. All this stuff that we read about. Because all of this depressing news that we're seeing, the bodies in the street, the children homeless, the people homeless in the paper, on CNN, all these places we see it, is not really a political problem. It's not a political problem. It is a consciousness problem. It is a consciousness problem. So any solutions that we come up with and try to implement, whatever they look like, are going to have to come from a true consciousness of inner peace. Inner peace, all right? If we are to have any hope at all of creating a lasting, stable, and balanced peace in the world. In other words, this isn't just about us against them, those guys over there. It's never about one side against the other. It is about everybody, one race of beings, okay? You see, sometimes that we lose sight of, what we lose sight of, because of all the drama and the noise and the excitement going on all the time, is that this thing we call the world is not a problem to be struggled with. It is a projection. The world is a projection that we ourselves are constantly creating and recreating. That's all life is. It's a mirror. Emerson said, life is the mirror of king and slave. The world is a projection. So all this social and international pushing and shoving that we see, including the guns and the bombs and the poison gas and all of these horrible things, is nothing more or less than a manifestation of the combined beliefs and the hopes and the fears and the ambitions and the insecurities and the dreams of every person in the world who ever lived up until now. That's what these things are. They're a reflection of all of that. It's kind of like a psychic group photograph. You know those photographs you had in high school where you had 200 kids in the photograph and it's hard to find yourself or find whoever it happens to be? Consider a psychic photograph of 7 billion people, okay? Everybody in the picture affects the picture as a whole. Everybody does, which means as each one of us takes charge of our own thoughts and our own beliefs and our own dreams and our own fears, we each begin to consciously contribute our power to the whole world instead of doing it unconsciously. Now we're doing it consciously, okay? Dr. Holmes says in The Science of Mind, he says, conscious directed thought is always more powerful than random undirected thought. All right, so we need to get some conscious, directed thought about peace. That means, think of what this means at depth. That means that if our thoughts are healing thoughts, then we contribute to the healing of the world. But if our thoughts are fearful or ignorant thoughts, and we don't recognize it, that's where the conscious parts comes in, and try to change it, okay, we risk adding our noise to the world's confusion. So as we look at the crises that are unfolding in Europe and Africa and, you know, even in some places in our own hemisphere, instead of picking one side or the other to defend or picking one side or the other to attack, okay, we need to focus on what our own individual consciousness is contributing to the whole. That's what we teach here. Now, Marianne Williamson is a great, most of you are familiar with her, a great proponent for peace. I understand she's running for Congress in California right now. And she even suggested at one point in time that we should have a Department of Peace instead of a Department of Defense. Very, very interesting, okay? In addition to, not necessarily, instead of. And she had a book about 10 years ago, I think it was, called Illuminata, A Return to Prayer. Wonderful book. And in it she says, this is a very simple phrase, the world is in a critical phase because we are. because we are. The world is in a massive shift because we are. It's a projection, okay? Now, part of the problem is we are not sure what kind of a world we want to create. I mean, we're great at messing around with all of the details, but we lose sight of the big picture. That's why we get so confused about whether war should sometimes be used and sometimes not, whether war is always evil or whether sometimes we might have to use it to protect ourselves, like in World War II. Now, the answer to that question really is not that difficult. We just need to get back to the basic spiritual laws of life, which tell us that the source of everything happening in the world today, the source of it all can only be found in our consciousness, in our collective, our shared heart and soul and mind. Which means if we intend to create a world where war is no longer an acceptable solution, then we need to remove all belief in violence from our own consciousness first, because that's where it begins. So that means keeping watch on our thoughts and not getting angry and irritated whenever we hear about any unpleasant or undesirable behavior. Okay, it means not being judgmental or angry or critical towards the person driving in front of us who doesn't use their turn signal, okay, or the person who has 12 items instead of 10 at the line at Publix, okay? It's funny, but that's what it means, okay? Every little bit of anger and self-righteous judgment has an effect. Okay, it's like that example in chaos theory where a butterfly flaps his wings in Borneo and creates a hurricane in Florida. You know, that's the kind of thing we're talking about. Every little bit has an effect. However, let's get human about this. Even though we know that it's better to be kind and compassionate and understanding, it's hard to be enlightened all the time. Okay? I mean, we all have our good days and our not-so-good days. Sometimes we're happy and confident. Sometimes we're frightened and insecure. Sometimes we are sweet and kind. Other times we are a pain in the butt, okay? Not me, but, you know, I'm sure you, anyway. My wife is going, yeah, right. Okay. One important part, very important part of our life experience is for us to realize that these cycles that we go through, these ups and downs, these seasons of our life, okay, are perfectly normal. They all have a purpose. We just have to learn to use each of these seasons for its own best purpose. For example, when we are feeling strong and creative, you know what that feels like? Those mornings where you wake up and you can lick the world, okay? And hopefully we feel that way more often than not. Those are the times when we can reach out and create something new and wonderful. We can contribute our amazing energy to the world. We can give completely of ourselves whatever it is we have to give. On the other hand, during those times, hopefully few, when we feel frightened or powerless, we can look within and ask ourselves, instead of striking out at somebody or saying something that we regret, we can look inside and wonder, why am I giving my power away? Why am I giving my power away? Okay? During those low periods, we can reach out to other people and ask for their help, because we're all in this together, and allow them to be in service for us. Okay? In other words, both the ebb and the flow of our consciousness is part of our growth. It's not something we need to stop at one point, get it at a perfect point and leave it there. There's going to be ebb and flow. In the same way the world we live in moves through cycles. The seasons of the year change from light to dark, from hot to cold, very frequently lately, actually. We may not like it when it's 30 degrees and raining, but that's where the flowers and all that come from later on. It's all a part of our cycle. Society goes through the same things. It goes through seasons of war and peace, of feast and famine, of prosperity and lack. The important thing to remember is what we call the bad times or the down times always contain a seed in consciousness of the good times. Always, okay? If we allow that seed to grow. Okay, it'll grow into the good times. But the only way we can find that seed, we can do this, is to find this seed and nurture it. But we have to remember that it's there even when things are dark and cold. Remember that song, The Rose? I think Bette Midler made it popular, that line. I'm not going to sing it to you, but I'll read you the line, okay? Just remember in the winter, far beneath the bitter snow, lies the seed that with the sun's love, okay, in the spring becomes the rose. That's what we remember. In the same way, beneath the worst scenario that we see, that we can possibly experience, including war, lies the seed, the divine potential for peace and heaven on earth. We have to remember that. We have to actually believe that, because if we don't believe it, it's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. Now, to expand on this idea and sort of lift it up to a little higher level of consciousness, I'm going to read something that everyone here has heard, probably many times, but in light of the present world situation, I think it takes on a very special meaning. I went back and looked it up and read it a month or so ago, and I found it to be a wonderful reminder, a perspective of the balance, the to and fro, the ebb and flow present in the universe, and a reminder to me that balancing opposites is a perfectly normal part of life. Now, for those of you who grew up as Bible thumpers and are familiar with the Old Testament, this reading is from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And for the rest of you heathens, it was a Pete Seeger song made popular by a group called The Birds in 1965. That's where I first heard it. So just relax and close your eyes if you'd like. And feel the wisdom and the power of this verse. And try to see the world through these glasses. To everything, there is a season. What's that song? Oh. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pull up that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rend, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. And a time of peace. Now, these are beautiful words, but they can be very confusing unless we understand what they really mean. Metaphysically speaking, meaning above and beyond the physical world we see, it's important to realize that this is not a list of experiences that we all have to go through. It is, however, a list of experiences that have been common to most of humanity throughout human history. Both individually in our own lives and collectively as a race of beings, as we have evolved mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, we've all done a lot of these things, or we've seen them done. Not just the good stuff, but the bad stuff as well. We've seen the war and the hate and done plenty of casting stones. All of us, that isn't because we or anyone else is bad or evil. It's because sometimes we are ignorant. In the real sense of the word, we're ignorant. We don't know something that we should know. It's because we forget or because we get distracted. It's because we misuse our God-given intelligence. It's because we misuse the spiritual laws available to us and we fail to see the abundance of goodness and kindness that is all around us. And as a result, we create experiences or we take action that sometimes produces some very unpleasant and undesirable results. But even when we do that, and even when anyone does this, there is something in us. There is a special part of us. There's a divine wisdom in us that is powered by love. Powered by love, no matter what terrible things we do to ourselves or each other, this allows us to grow beyond our mistakes into something greater than we were before. That's what it does. Now, sometimes we figure it out by ourselves through trial and error, but other times we are blessed, it's a great term, with certain teachers or leaders like Gandhi and Dr. King and Jesus and the Buddha and a number of others, you know the names, spiritual leaders who show us, not by their direction, but by their example of how powerful we can be. Now, sometimes it takes us a few false starts before we manage to move up to a higher level, but eventually it happens. It always has, and potentially it always will. So this is just another one of those times. The lesson is, through it all, we have to maintain our spiritual balance. Our balance. We have to remember that life is not about searching for peace. It's about recognizing that the potential for peace is always right here and right now, no matter what things look like out there. President Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, once said this. It's a great quote. He said, "Peace is a daily, a weekly, a monthly process, gradually changing opinions, slowly eroding old barriers, quietly building new structures." And then he said, "The mere absence of war is not peace." Very profound statement. All of the social and political processes that we're going through around the world right now should not just be about avoiding war. Now, that's not a bad goal. It's certainly better than the alternative. But we need to go further than that. We need to go deeper than that. We should be spending our incredible spiritual energy creating a consciousness of peace in our own mind, in our own heart, and seeing that same consciousness as potentially present in the mind of every person everywhere. It's not just about not fighting or not killing, okay? It's about not judging each other for our beliefs or our mistakes. It's about learning how to disagree with people respectfully, whether it's at home, at work, or at the United Nations. It's about continuous, honest, open, and respectful dialogue, instead of a constant pattern of gossip and lies and manipulation or accusations or threats and all those other stuff. In the present world, if we are so inclined, there is plenty of blame to throw at both sides in every conflict. But we don't help ourselves or anyone else by getting caught up in that frame of mind, because blame doesn't create peace, it only makes things worse. Only through kindness and compassion, as the Dalai Lama talks about, and a certain understanding that nonviolence is the only intelligent solution, will we ever be able to create a peaceful society and a peaceful world. Now, if we could all learn to think this way, all the time in every situation, then any action that we personally decide to take in the meantime, as long as it's in harmony with our own conscience, whether it's marching in a peace demonstration or being on the front lines in an actual conflict, okay, we will be acting from a consciousness of inner peace, and hopefully so will everyone else. Now, it's not always easy. But that's the only way that lasting peace is going to come. Because then it will be coming from inside of us, which is always the place where it has to start. And that's when peace will no longer be the result of our actions. It will be the cause of our actions. That's where we need to get, and that's when we know we're on the right path. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. So it is. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's take a moment. And in these few moments, I want you to feel more than just the seat beneath your body or this room. I want you to feel the emotions that are being felt around the world right now. Let's allow our consciousness to expand, to share with those in so many parts of the world who are also part of the same consciousness that we are, but who are going through pain and conflict and suffering. People in Africa, people in the Middle East, in Asia, even those who are suffering non-physical violence, emotional violence, and recognize that there is something better. I know that there is a power for good in the world, a power that does not bring peace, it is peace. I call this power God. I call it the spirit of life, and it is in me and every other person. As I recognize this, I no longer feed conflict, even far away, with my own consciousness of anger or self-righteousness. I no longer take sides. I put myself on God's side, which is the only side there really is. And knowing this, I create space in my mind for the best to happen. I create space in my consciousness for the best of everyone to come forward. And I envision a world that I am living in. I see myself in it. I see everyone in it. And I envision a world that is peaceful and respectful, that honors everyone regardless of their politics, their race, their gender, their nationality, a world that honors every person and creates inclusion instead of exclusion, where we celebrate our differences instead of fighting over them. And as I create space for this world, I create space for everyone around me to feel that way. And through my own example and my own consciousness, I contribute a peaceful consciousness to the world. This is the strength I have. This is what I have to offer, and I give it freely. I'm grateful for this opportunity to know something better. I'm grateful for this expanded consciousness that is mine to share. I'm grateful for all I have been given and all I have yet to give. Knowing this, I see the world in a better way, and I give thanks, allowing this to be the truth in my heart and mind from this moment on. And so it is.